Blog Talk Radio.
Inside schools. While most of us think of schools as a social good, in the history of some people, that has not been the case. Among Canada's Indigenous people, those we have come to call Indians, schools have become a place of pain, sorrow, and loss. For the better part of a century, these schools, called residential schools, were where Indigenous children came to be whipped, punished, and traumatized for the sin of not being white. First run by the government and later by the Roman Catholic Church, these schools became a site of horror, torture, and death. Recently, the ground surrounding the residential school in Kamloops, British Columbia, revealed the graves of over 200 Indigenous children. Subsequent searches have found hundreds of other children around so-called residential schools. I recently read a book by Native leader George Manuel, 1921-1989, entitled The Fourth World, published in 1974, who wrote of his school years in the following way. Three things stand out in my mind: hunger, speaking English, and being called a heathen because of my grandfather. On the day we arrived at the school, each new boy was assigned an interpreter who was a senior student. All the teachers were monks or devout lay Catholics. We called them brothers. In my first meeting with brothers, he showed me a long black leather strap and told me, through my interpreter, if you are ever caught speaking Indian, this is what you will get across your hands. Manuel, 63-64. Kamloops, British Columbia, Canada. A site of genocide school. From an imprisoned nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Prison Radio.
Greetings. Maya Hotep to everyone. Welcome to another segment of New Day Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, also known as Dr. Filet. And, of course, you just heard Mumia Abu-Jamal. Today would mark the day that he was sentenced. 1982 was the year, July the 3rd, 1982. Can you imagine that, you know, normally when these people do things, they kind of go home for the so-called holiday, but yet in 1982, they decided that they were going to hold court the day before their holiday, and in doing so, made certain that they were going to give Mumia the death penalty. It's important that we look at these things, particularly now. As you can hear, Mumia continuously speaks out against injustices for all peoples. And when I saw this one piece to talk about genocide, I can't wait to hear what he kind of says about what we're talking about in the context of genocide. I'm sure he is going to pin something and say something that is going to be extremely profound, and we are certainly looking forward to it. But I want you to hear his voice as it is. This commentary that you just heard was just done a few days ago. And so you can hear he's sounding very strong, We're very thankful for that, and now we must work diligently, even more so, to get him free. So one of the things that we're going to be talking about, particularly this entire month, as people are observing Independence Day and those types of things, we're going to look a little closer at independence as it pertains to us, freedom as it pertains to us. We've got a lot of work to do, family, and some of us are really serious about doing it. You know, this year and last year has been a very interesting time period. We said 4 or 5 years ago that the year 2020 was in fact going to be a very, very powerful year. Well, it most certainly was. And I can tell you, 21 and 22 is going to also be very interesting. We said that it would be a time of perfect vision and clearer vision. Well, let me tell you, it has certainly become that. It also is helping to identify further who is really, really about the work that is necessary for us to be free. Now, it's a lot going on with distractions, with this kinds of directions and other kinds of things. And certainly you all are pretty, you know, clear on what some of that is. Well, there's so much kind of upgraded stuff going on that it is so important that we make certain that people do understand that people talk black and talk about being black. But let me tell you, Negro stuff is at its height, but it is so refined and fine-tuned now that, well, what can we say? It is very interesting. You know, I'm writing this book called The New Philadelphia Negro, and fortunately, I'm able to now work on some other chapters that identify not only the new Philadelphia Negro in terms of how they function, why they function, but also to give some kind of other insight into the other types of Negroitis. Yep, I've come up with a new term, y'all. Negroitis, you know, a disease, a infliction, and so forth that has so many different facets. But we've got to call this stuff the way it is. And don't get me wrong, some of it is salvageable. You know, some of it, you know, we will be able to get something from it or work with it. Some of that stuff, I hate to tell you, some of that stuff is, it just can't be tolerated at all. Totally, totally detrimental. At any rate, we're going to talk about that a little later on. I want to remind everyone, of course, that we're getting ready for our first mass assembly at the United Nations. Of course, we are talking about September the 4th. Now, this is our first mass assembly to begin to let our people know nationwide and also worldwide that we are preparing to launch something that is very, very groundbreaking, and we're talking about the Recharge Genocide 21 project. There have been other campaigns or other projects prior to this one, of course, and it certainly has been inspirational for us. However, we strongly believe that this is the continuation and also the next step, the next level of some of the things that have already been done. So I'm going to tell you more about that shortly. Again, mark your calendar. September 4th, we plan to be at the United Nations. At that point, we will officially begin the Boots on the Ground national campaign for the obtainment of the million signatures. We've already been working on that, as you know, but now we are really hoping that groups, organizations, institutions, businesses, and so forth will now have the sign-up sheet in their facility, that they make the commitment to get at least 10 signatures on there, you know, for us. And again, this is the letter of intent. It's not the petition yet. That's a little down the road. This is a protracted struggle, although we do have some immediate things that we're looking at to get action on. And by the way, one of the immediate things that we're talking about is justice for our black farmers. Yep, for those who do not know what's been going on with that, our black farmers were, in fact, allocated monies to kind of, you know, give them some of what is rightfully theirs, needless to say. Well, of course, as it would be, a bunch of stuff has gone into effect to disrupt that. So a little later on, we're going to be talking with Sister Kara Boyd, who, of course, is the wife of Dr. John Boyd, but also in her own right is an activist, an educator, and, of course, she's the coordinator for the programming and events for the National Black Farmers Association. So we're going to be talking with her very shortly to really get some insight into what is going on with this recent court decision and why these monies are being held up in order for our farmers to be able to move forward. So we're going to talk with her about that and a few other things. MWM is going to be partnering with the Black Farmers for 2022 as we are bringing forward our 25-year anniversary for next year, and now can also bring forward the what we call Black Print Agenda 25. And so finally, we have put some things in place that will enable our sisters to invest. Now, you're going to hear us talk more about Tulsa. We are looking to invest in various things that are relevant to Tulsa, Oklahoma, but also, excuse me, in terms of our black farmers. Why sisters are not doing some of the things that we know we should and can do has really baffled me over the years. However, fortunately, I have a much better understanding about it now. I really do. I get how, you know, the mentality of many of our sisters have just been warped and destroyed to a degree of just dysfunctional kinds of, you know, programming. And fortunately, again, we have enough information now to change some of that. Now, it's a struggle, don't get me wrong, but we're up for it, so it's okay. But the point is, we have some of the tools now to do that and to now make what we believe a really, really incredible difference in terms of progressively moving things holistically in the manner that it should be. So at any rate, virtually we're going to talk to Sister, again, Kara Boyd. Also, prior to that, now, I mentioned earlier about independence. Well, the Republic of New Africa for years have talked about land. In fact, one of the slogans or one of the phrases that you oftentimes still hear many citizens of the Republic of New Africa say, free the land. Well, when you look at this past 100 years, certainly land was primary in terms of making certain that we could begin to have our own land, which gave us a certain level and capability to move forward. And every time we got it, for the most part, you know what they did. Just as in today, they're destroying our capability to have generational wealth by way of gentrification and foreclosures and things of that nature. So, you know, most people know that they're trying to know that when you do not have land, when you do not have property, 9 times out of 10, you ain't going to be moving forward too well either in some other areas. So, again, we give thanks for the founders and the workers of the Republic of New Africa who over the years have certainly demonstrated, you know, a certain type of spirit of resistance and collectiveness and capability. So very shortly, we're going to talk with the brother who has written several books, has a channel and as an educator and a whole bunch of other things. And we're going to talk about the necessity for nation building and things of that nature. Now, for those who do not know, MWM has been working on those types of things since the time of its conception, which is one of the reasons why it was kind of complicated for some people, because it was never our mission to just, you know, be quote-unquote an organization. That was never it. And so when people know that you have the not only the capability to think out the box and do out the box, it creates a lot of enemies. And so over the years, people have nitpicked. They have done some petty kinds of things, sabotage, all kinds of stuff, because some knew that what we were building was certainly more than just some female black women's organization. Definitely about community, well, family first, of course, community, society, and nation building. All right, and so now we're able to really kind of bring those things forward. And so with that said, we're going to start breaking it down for folks. Now, again, we're not talking about leaving the U.S. And now, don't get me wrong, we do plan to have bases in other countries, no doubt about that, because we're universal. In fact, one of the concepts that we're going to be bringing forward is what we call black, not only nationalism, but black internationalism, as in terms of a thinking process, in terms of an ideology, in terms of a philosophy, so that for those who want to keep talking about, oh, you know, there's no such, there's no place to call black, blah, blah, blah. Look, we've already heard that whole game, and best believe we're ready to deal with it now in terms of some ideological concepts. If you can deal with that, then so be it. If not, that's cool too, because we're coming with it. At any rate, we're going to talk more about what we're dealing with in bringing forward the ideals of course, Pan-Africanism, black nationalism, and bringing it into the 21st century. So with that said, we're going to talk tonight about some fundamentals. It's a nice dialogue we're going to get into. Nation building. What it is, why it is, etc. We must have our own nations, and we must support the ones that have already been established. The Nation of Islam, for example. Now, I know people got some issues and problems. However, there got to be something in there that you find worthy of support, even if it's just a newspaper, the Final Call. I mean, there ain't too much else out there. So what we want to begin to do is to examine what we can support in these various things. We can always find fault. We can always find some negativity. However, what are some of the positive things that we can look at and support that, particularly those having their own nation or society, not just an organization or a group? We've got to grow up and go to the next step. So very shortly, we're going to talk with my brother, and I'm certainly looking forward to talking with him. His name is Emba Mbulu, and again, he's an author as well as an educator and historian and so forth and so on, and we're going to talk with him about the importance of black / African nation building. And then a little later on, we're going to talk again with Sister Kara Boyd. And with that conversation, we're going to talk in regards to black farmers. Because again, there's certain things that are fundamental. Land, and with land, producing your own capability to feed yourselves. So we are now putting those components and pieces together. For MWM, we now have the A Million Black Women Rising Federation. And come September, we will introduce to you the operational components, including such things as Sisters of the Soil. Oh, yeah, we're coming. All right, while we're waiting for our brother to join us, and brother, if you are already with us, I need you to press 1 so that I can see that you are in queue. We talked about Brother Imba, and also we want to remind everyone that we invite you all to join in the conversation a little later on. We're going to invite you to give your comments, and listen. It's time. It's really past time as far as we're concerned. By the way, I want to remind you that we will have this year's Queen Mother More Week is coming. That's right. And with that, we will do our Reparatory Justice Forum this month, as we've been doing every month, and getting ready for our Reparatory Justice Mass Assembly. Now, remember, this year, 2021, we're at the United Nations. This is the introduction. This is to unveil what we're getting ready to do. And guess what? Simultaneously, we are also planning and preparing for the mass assembly that will be in Washington, D.C. next year, We Charge Genocide. So that's, again, what's getting ready to happen is, first, we take the letter of intent to the United Nations. We put them on notice and let them know that we are preparing to file an official petition, et cetera, whatever it's required in order to charge this government with crimes against humanity. Then next year, we go directly to Washington, D.C., and we let this government know officially that they are being charged. So, we'll tell you more about that a little later on. Okay, I do see that we have our brother in queue, and so we are going to get ready to have a very, very important dialogue. It's time. It's past time. Years ago, when I wasn't even coming into the struggle at that point, but I remember hearing about it, and I remember people saying, "What time is it? What time is it?" And the response was, "It's nation time." You know, and I got a chance years later to meet some of these incredible brothers and sisters, Baba Herman Ferguson and his wife, Mother Ayulawa, and Chokwe Lumumba, Attorney Chokwe Lumumba, and so many others who taught us, who demonstrated for us these concepts of nation building and nation time. Well, family, for some, you might think it's cliche-ish or it's worn, you know, has had its time. I can tell you, any people that don't have their own will not flourish beyond a certain point. We get it. At any rate, let's go to our live line now, and let's welcome Brother Imba Mbulu. And hold on, let's bring him in. And all right. Greetings, my brother. How are you this evening?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Just wonderful. As long as we can continue to fight and see some victories ahead, it's always a good day.
Yeah, I have to agree with that.
Well, again, thank you for joining us. And before we begin the conversation, if you would be so kind to share with our family a little bit about you, who you are, what you do, and why you do it.
Well, I'm just a citizen of the Republic of New Africa, and I'm just been doing what I've been doing for a whole lot of years, working with community organizations and pushing Black nationalism, trying to take it to the next level, which it needs
mm-hmm.
to do now. As
yes.
a matter of fact, it should have been done long ago. We really
yes.
haven't done what we should have been doing, and we're paying the price, but we still got to
yes.
try to get that done. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, indeed. So where are you based? What city, what state?
Well, right now I'm in North Carolina. But historically, when we were most active, I was in D.C. We were
mm-hmm.
working with a Black nationalist community organization called The People. And that is where most of the material that is on my website originated.
Okay. So you said that you've been with Republic of New Africa for many years. Could you share with us how many years?
The Republic of New Africa is just a name, really. I mean, I've been a New African because that's what they called it, but all of us were New Africans before the Republic of New Africa received its name. So ever since Republic of New Africa has been in existence, I've been a New African. But black nationalism started a long time before the name Republic of New Africa was applied to the country, to the land that we have the right to occupy.
So then let me rephrase the question. So how long have you been a New African?
All my life. I know what you're trying to get to, but, you know, it's we have been New Africans all our lives. If the way we teach history, when we were enslaved and kidnapped, as soon as we were kidnapped, we stopped being Africans and became New Africans because we entered a new phase. And when I said we stopped being Africans, I don't mean that literally, but our national identity changed. What we lack in the U.S. of A presently is a national identity. We prefer to be referred to as Americans, which is really stupid. When you look at it nationally, when you look at it internationally, it's okay to call ourselves Americans because we're on in North America. All people in North America are Americans, Central America, Americans, South Americans, Americans. That's good, and not the way we are Americans. But to use that term to identify our national allegiance is stupid or lacking in consciousness. So we need to stop doing that and start referring to ourselves in a national context, and that national context yields a New Africa. I've been a New African all of my life. All of us have been New Africans all of our lives, but some of us just don't realize it yet. I know you realize it.
I got you. Okay. So for the point of clarity, I think it's safe to say that in terms of being a citizen of the Republic of New Africa, some, of course, have been that for 50 years. Would that be safe to say?
About some have been what?
Some have been citizens of the Republic of New Africa for roughly 50 years.
Yeah, even though it goes back farther than that. Even if you go back to the name, is 1968? Is that 50 years?
Yeah, well, 72, a little over
50 years. Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Yeah,
right.
We can roll with that.
Okay.
Right.
All right. Great. Because, you know, we've had on our program, of course, Baba Bilal, Sunni Ali, and Mama Kandi. She, of course, tunes in frequently. And I think both of them are, you know, original members.
Right. But see, I always identify myself as a citizen because I'm not a part of the provisional government.
I got you. Okay. I understand.
Right.
All right. Okay. So we're clear on that now. So now let's move forward with, because I got a chance to look at your website and some of your videos, and I'm like, oh, yeah, we must share this information. So before we go to that, let's talk a little bit about your book publishing entity, and it's called Asset Books, correct?
Yeah. The name of the book publishing entity is Asset Books.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can say that. But it's not just Asset Books. The website is not just about publishing. It's about education.
Right.
So there is
a
distinction between the two.
Okay.
But they're both focusing on Black nationalism. And what the website does, well, really, there's an interrelation because I mentioned earlier the people, the community organization that we started. We did a lot of teaching, and we published a newsletter. And many of the classes that we taught, we had to actually write the material ourselves because we didn't find material that we thought was adequate. Sometimes we did. For instance, we did a Black psychology course, and of course, for non-Black skin, white mask hit the spot. So we didn't have to do much in that regard. But when it came to Black history and American history, we ended up writing the books. We did philosophy courses. We ended up writing the materials, using them in classes, and later publishing them as books.
Mm-hmm.
So much of the material in the books that I write are from classes and stuff that we were giving in the 1970s.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, and we're going to give folks information about the website and also the YouTube channel. I mean, and as the brother just said, it's an abundant amount of information. We've been working on our own kind of university, online university called Macaba, and we wanted to launch it this past February. However, we're still kind of working out the best platforms for it. But again, we want to turn people on to some of the things that are already there. And certainly, brother, you have so much information on your site. So we're going to get this again next where they can go. Mm-hmm.
It's public information. So anything you all want to use it. I mean, people have the right to information. So, we have copyrights and stuff like that, just to keep people from denying us usage. But as far as people who are trying to educate Black people, you have access to that information. You can use it as you see fit. So any information on their website that you all think you can use on your educational website, you're free to use it.
Oh, wonderful. You are an educator, is that correct?
Correct.
And what are some of the other, because I did read a little bit about you, but what are some of the other areas that you focus on or that you provide in terms of information or expertise, let's put it that way?
Well, really, I kind of concentrated on history, but I was more into the politics of history than historical events. And that's kind of like what everything revolved around, so to speak. Now, my education, the education that I give credit to, is based on independent study. I really didn't start getting into the things that I should have been into until I went beyond the so-called formal teaching that I was provided with. So I normally don't be talking about universities and all of that sort of stuff because really they have been mostly a waste for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't even value a mm-hmm. degree from a university in this country because their scholarship is so poor.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. All right. So with that said, family, we're going to give you the website where you can go to the website, peruse, look at it. A lot of information. And then I'm going to have the brother to share some of the books, the titles that he has actually written, and they're on Amazon as well as can they purchase them directly from you as well, my brother?
It would be probably better for them to purchase them from Amazon because I don't maintain an inventory.
Okay, I got you. All right. Okay, so please
if they're purchasing them, then purchase them because they're interested in the material. Don't purchase them to mm-hmm. try to help me because I don't make money off of those books. Bezos makes money, but I don't.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
You know, if you're going to purchase it because you're interested in the material.
No, that's right.
I don't make
right.
money off of those books.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's really a wonderful thing to hear that because in this day and age, for whatever reason, I talk with a lot of people and have, you know, observed a lot of people. And for whatever reason, that spirit of doing things because we just need to as a people, because our people need it, that has gotten so far away. And again, I'm not saying don't make money, but you can make money off of a whole lot of other things. You know?
Right.
But it seems like a lot of our people now have gotten so far away, you know, struggle and the things that is relevant to obtaining justice has really become a business for some.
Mm-hmm. They have gone deep into that white power rabbit hole.
Wow.
And we need to learn how to take advantage of some of the services they provide without
mm-hmm.
falling into their trap.
That's right.
We have become so much like them that it's a lot of us are more into what they want us to be into than we are into our own selves. We have really
mm-hmm.
become isolated. We're not isolated, alienated from ourselves.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's bad. That's really bad. And it has led me to a conclusion about a lot of black people who think they have made some progress in
mm-hmm.
this system. And now put another way, I think the key to black nationalism is the blacks who are the least educated, what they call educated,
mm-hmm.
the blacks who are least well off financially, the blacks who are least concerned about integrating with white power. Those
mm-hmm.
are the blacks that we need to concentrate on. As a matter of fact, I have concluded, and it's just my opinion, W.E.B. Du Bois used to talk about the talented 10th.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to double that 10th to the 5th and rename it the weakest 5th. And we can just about forget about recruiting them into a black nationalist movement because they are not interested. There might be some exceptions. There might be some exceptions. But those exceptions will figure it out on their own, and they will look for us. But for the most part, we can forget about them. We need to concentrate on people who can really you know, just disconnect from white power. One of the things we did when I was with the people. I was the editor of a newsletter, the People's Newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
And we always capitalized the term black when it referred
right.
to a human being. And we
mm-hmm.
always capitalized black and people when we were talking about us as a people, because they were proper nouns. There were no adjectives involved in that. And
That's
there was
right.
a psychological, you know, a psychological advantage of looking at yourself or viewing yourself as a proper being. In the beginning, and I think, I don't know for sure, but I think our newsletter was the first newsletter that actually capitalized those terms on a regular basis. And in the beginning, people were you know, kind of skeptical, and most of the people who were reading the newsletter were people in the black nationalist community.
Right.
But it was something about it. It took them time to get used to it. And I've seen recently in the last 3 or 4 years, I've seen some writings from some publications where that
mm-hmm.
term is now being capitalized. So they're
right.
getting around
right.
to that.
Right.
But
That's
there
right.
are still a lot of blacks who just can't do it. They just can't capitalize that B
mm,
because
mm,
they're so
mm.
far into that white rabbit hole. They're so far
mm.
into it. One of the
That's
things
right.
that I encourage people to do now is to identify themselves as new Africans. We are proper.
Mm-hmm,
we are correct when we say we are black. We are correct
That's right.
about that. And we are correct when we say we are African.
Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
we are incorrect when we identify nationally with the United States of America.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a whole lot of us, and I'm thinking mainly about that 20% I just mentioned, that just cannot feel right referring to themselves as a new African. They cannot feel right, and as long as you cannot feel right doing it, you aren't going to be able to do it. You aren't going to be useful to a black nationalist movement.
Well, you know, the whole idea of black nationalism for a segment of our people, you know, has already proven that they're not going to embrace it. I mean, we've seen that for at least 50 years when Brother Malcolm, you know, brought it forward, and we saw how much resistance, even in his own circle, you know, to use the term black nationalism. So,
mm-hmm.
so we pretty much know that certainly those who are, you know, more into being integrationalists definitely are not going to try to promote it or advance it or anything like that. So I
right.
totally agree. Yeah. It's that time now.
Mm-hmm. And the good thing is that there's so much intelligence in the black community. We don't need them.
Mm-hmm.
There
That's
are so
right.
many smarts, so many people who know, so many people who are willing to work once they
mm-hmm.
learn something new. You could cut off that top field, and we wouldn't miss a beat once we get to those people who are least invested in
mm-hmm.
white power. We have the intelligence. And additionally, that is where the energy is that we need.
Mm-hmm.
We need that
mm-hmm.
energy. So one of the major things that we need to do is to start getting to those people in those
mm-hmm.
in those environments. Concentrate on those people. Concentrate the struggle around those people instead
mm-hmm.
of the people who are getting all of the press and the people
right.
who we see on Yahoo and CNN and all of that sort of stuff. We got to focus on a different segment of the black population.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And Brother Emba, that's why I'm so glad to hear you say this, because one of the things that we advocate with MWM and have from the time of its conception is the necessity to always stay connected to the grassroots. And again, this is what Brother Malcolm demonstrated very, very clearly. And so we've always made certain that the grassroots, the masses of our people, always, you know, had access, direct access to us and we to them. It's been difficult, more difficult to do that, but we've, you know, been committed to doing that and have maintained that position. And so I totally agree. It is so absolutely necessary. And I think it helps to demonstrate or give the example of exactly kind of who is who and what is what. Because people who will not intermingle or really be direct with the grassroots, usually that's an indication. That's an indication in a lot of situations. The one thing that there were many things that I loved about Dr. Khaled, but one of the things for sure was his capability to connect with anyone, particularly folks in the hood.
Mm-hmm.
He had that capability without it, and it was genuine, you see.
Right.
And yet at this very same time, he could go in any other circle and whip butt, you know, head up in any other circle as well, intellectually, you know, academically, scholastically, whatever. But had a direct connection with the people. And so this is why I think, and so when you ask that question today, who does that? And don't even talk about women. That's a whole other thing. You see, and I've seen this over the years, and I didn't understand it at first, but I do now, because when you talk about W.E.B. Du Bois, I realize this elitism in a way, because I'm from Philly, and we often talk about, you know, this thing called the boule, which was also developed or founded in Philly, but not just in the context of it being a so-called secret society, but in the context of how it operates and thinks. You see, this is a mentality that we're talking about.
Right.
So it's important that we point these things out today.
Yeah, we need to be into us, and we do not give us the respect that we deserve. I just can't understand. Well, I can understand it, but when you look at what white people, this white power system, here in this country and the other white countries, when you look at how low level they are, I just can't see what the appeal is to an intelligent thinking black person. Now, I know they'd be going into the money, but I mean, that's really a, you know, that's kind of, you know, kind of like wobbling with the pigs, you know.
So, my brother, I think because I'm glad you're asking that question, and we're going to open up the line shortly and see if our folks have any responses or answers to some of that as well. But one of the things that I've come up with is a part of what happened, a part of the indoctrination doesn't come close enough or doesn't describe it. But the kinds of things that happened as a result of being kidnapped and enslaved produced some other kinds of thinking processes or the lack thereof. And it produced, you know, these other mindsets. So while one might call it the woolly lynch chip, or another one might call it menticide or what have you. Those are some of the things that I've seen have played into why some of our people want to emulate and be like these people, like you know. And so it is because of the lack of knowledge of self, also being taught to hate yourself and anyone that looks like you. So all of these things after generation after generation after generation, because remember, years ago, there were no black doll babies.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So little girls had to play with all the little white dolls.
Right. And you know what I call all of that? Leftovers from slavery and colonialism.
Sure.
These leftovers. And it is even in how we relate to each other in terms of family, personal relations. While we were dominated by them, they took away all of our responsibilities. Go over there and knock that winch. After you knock her up, go and knock up another winch. No responsibility for what comes out. The people wonder why black people. Well, they might say things like crime or other negative terms. Why is there so much of this negative or so much of that negative in the black community? And my question is, why isn't there more of it? The fact that there is so little is proof of how advanced we have been as a people.
Wow, that's profound. That is definitely profound when you think about it. With all that has happened, wow, interesting.
Yep.
So, my brother, share with our family some of the titles of your book so they can go check it out.
Okay. The first book that was published was 10 Lessons, an Introduction to Black History. We had been using that in the Black History course that we taught. I started writing that book and the American History book, which is entitled An Introduction to White History, the History of White America. That's the title that I ended up using. The actual title of the book was One Rotten Apple, the History of the United States of America, but I didn't use that. That was based on the you know, the theory about one rotten apple spoils the barrel. But I have remnants of that title in the cover page. People would see five apples, and one of them is a white apple. But it doesn't explain it. So I started writing those books at about the same time, but I finished the Black History book immediately, but there were some years that lagged before I finished the White History book. But they together are kind of like a history of the United States of America. There was another title, Essays, called Black Smart. There was the Black Studies book, a small book of essays called Not to Be, which is also comes under the title Dissecting Integration. There was a title called Playing Black Cheap. And the more recent titles have been America in Black, and Black Economists, I think it is. I don't remember what all the titles are, really. But some of them I have put on Amazon. But there are others that I haven't put on Amazon. So, you know, they can just type in my name on Mbulu Books, and it would generally take them to some of the books that I have there.
Okay. So let's also do this. Please give our family the website so they can also go to the website.
Okay, the website is oketsbooks.com, OOKS.com. There's a free university up there. People can, if people want to, they can apply to get a certificate or a degree. There are several courses. I think there are 3 degrees that are offered based on them completing a number of specified courses. But I generally encourage people to not seek a degree or a certificate, because it really doesn't serve any purpose. And plus they have to pay for that. So they can do the studying on their own and just about get all the information. And they can always email me and ask questions. If they run into issues. There have been a few people who have gotten certificates and degrees for whatever reason. They just want it as a show or whatever. But I discourage it. I don't like to be checking those papers. You know.
Okay.
It takes a lot of time.
Right. All right. So give them that website one more time.
That's asetbooks.com. People can put the www. But it's asetbooks.com. ASETBOOKS.com. And the people who want to enter, who want to see a video, there are videos on the website. There are other videos on YouTube, and they can go to YouTube and type in the Only Real Solution channel, and it will take them to, but it won't take them to my site, but you'll see the red, black, and green logo, and you click on that, and it will take them to my YouTube site.
Okay. All right, my brother. Well, we thank you so much for sharing this information, and we certainly look forward to having you come back to visit with us again soon. And family, again, I encourage you, please go to that website. There's a lot of information at that website. You definitely will find some things of interest. I am certain of that. And my brother, I'm certainly looking forward to talking with you further. You know, to see in what way we can possibly collaborate or partner, you know, in doing some things. Again, we're working on the development of Black nationalism and bringing it forward in the context of Black internationalism and really mapping it out so that, you know, it's not as ambiguous as it has been in the past. We want to make sure that, you know, that certain types of codes of conduct and other things are really brought forward now in the 21st century. So we're going to be holding sessions to do that. And one thing I have to mention, and you hit it really, really well, you know, for those who that are still writing and allowing other people to use the lowercase b when they are referring to us, MWM has taken the position since the time of its conception. We have never allowed it. We have never done it. Whenever we write Black, it's always with a capital B.
Exactly.
And that is self-determination.
Right.
You know, that's exhibiting our own. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
People who feel like they just can't do it, they got an issue they got to deal with.
Absolutely.
How can you not capitalize yourself, your own? How can you not do it?
Yep, And because we are putting it in the context that we are putting it in, we reserve the right to do it in that manner. And, of course, we've heard all the arguments, oh, it's an adjective and all of that. Well, we've got a whole nother solution for all of that as well, which I'll convey at another time, which will demonstrate how weak that argument really is. But, you know,
yeah.
It's all good. Lessons well learned.
The person who uses the language controls the language. If you allow somebody else to control the language you speak, then you are bad off. Nobody can tell you what should be capitalized and what should not be capitalized. Nobody can tell you you can't say you yields. Nobody can tell you what a bad word is. The language is the property of the person who uses it. And if other people can't get to that, then too bad.
All right. I love it. Well, my brother, I thank you again. I was going to ask if you would share your age, but I'm not unless you just feel like you want to. but I can tell there's some wisdom going on there, and we certainly appreciate it. I'll just say that. We certainly appreciate you and all that you've shared with us and certainly the work that you and contributions that you've given to us. So I look forward to talking with you again.
Yes, it's been nice talking to you and your group. And I'm going to send you an email as soon as all right.
Oh, wonderful.
You know,
wonderful.
Greetings
yes, and
to,
let us...
greetings to the listeners, to all the new Africans. And all of the non-new Africans who are listening.
All right. And let me do this before I see Sister Kara is in queue, so we're going to bring her in next. But let me just say real quickly, family, if there's anyone that has a question or a comment briefly, you can press one now as well before we let our brother go. We do have Sister Kara waiting. We're going to bring her in a few moments. And my brother, Emba, if you – and oh, by the way, family, if you don't know how to spell his name correctly so that you can put it in – your search is capital M-B-A, capital M-B-U-L-U. Okay, that's the correct spelling for his name. And that way you can get the titles of the books and so forth. Okay, but if you do have a question or a comment, you certainly are welcome to press one now and we will bring you in. Now, I'm not sure. I see two numbers with the same area code, so I'm not sure. It might be someone Sister Kara has asked to call in, but I'm going to go there real quick just to be sure. Caller, you are at 7492. I don't know if you have a question or a comment for our brother, but if so, we welcome you to do so now.
Rubber Snow Green, Sister African, how you doing?
Oh,
this is Brother Lee.
Welcome home. Well, I can't say welcome home, but hey! Hey, y'all.
Welcome to the show,
Dom. From Venezuela. Yes. How you be, my brother?
We're fine. We still struggling, sister. You know, where there's struggle, there's progress. And I really don't have a question or nothing, but because of your dynamic guest, my brother, Embo, I just want to say to the listening audience and the family, this is a down-to-earth, beautiful brother. We appreciate the work that he's doing. And like all things, please take some time to check out his information and support the brother in terms of whatever you can. And I'd like to just say hello to the brother. And, brother, I did get your communication, and everything's good, and we'll talk about it. So anyway, brother, I just want to give a shout-out to you and thank you for all that you do for our people. So that's all I had to say, Empress, and I'll be getting back with you later. And I'm talking about, you know, our trip to Venezuela to your audience.
We want to get you on to talk about your trip to Venezuela and the conference and all of that. So let's talk tomorrow and work on scheduling you for that.
Yeah, no problem. And, you know, just a little shout-out To those who may not be doing nothing from 7 to 9 tomorrow night, please don't forget to check out Africa on the Move. We got some interesting issues we can discuss tomorrow night. So go to Blog Talk or call 323-679-0841. Check us out. But main thing, I just want to shout out to my brother, give him his due support, and like he's asking, you know, just tell him, thank him for all the things you do. That's all. So moving forward, Bible's novel. Thank you, sister, for the work that you're doing
thank
as well.
You, all right. Thank you much.
All right, Lee. Happy talking to you.
All right. That was our brother Lee Robinson. Of course, I can't wait to hear about the conference that he just came back from in Venezuela. And, of course, you know, there's some other connecting pieces to that. And, again, this is what we're talking about in terms of building the kinds of things that need to happen. Oh, and by the way, Brother Lee, one of our brothers will be forwarding something to you if he hasn't already. Okay, we're going to close out with Brother Emba. Brother, my brother, again, I want to thank you. I'm going to give you your closing comments for tonight. And again, we thank you for sharing the information with us.
Well, no closing comments. I don't want to take time away from your other guest. She's already lost 8 minutes. So people can get in contact with me through my website. And like I said, I'll send you an email because I would like to work with you on the education thing if we can work that
Wonderful.
Out.
Wonderful. Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it. All right, my brother. Thank you again.
All right. You take care.
Yes. Peace to you. All right, family. Moving right along again. That was Brother Emba, Mbulu, in a wonderful conversation. And we look forward to having him back with us again. Definitely want to talk more about the importance of nation building. So we want to really kind of tune into that. In the meantime, again, we cannot talk about nation building and not talk about land. The fact that we do have black folks that have land, but we also have a situation where the land is being taken away. We've been manipulated in such ways that we are losing the land and falling into debt and all this other kind of trickery that the system tends to do. Well, some of us are committed to fighting back. That's just the bottom line. So we are going to not only rekindle our relationship with the black farmers, but now map out some plans of action. So without further ado, we're going to bring in Sister Kyra Boyd, who has been with us a few times in the past. It's been too long, actually, but we're going to make sure we change that and keep a constant contact because the information that needs to be circulated amongst us, we've got to do a better job. And not just that, but the work that it entails for us to get the land that we need and secure the land that our brothers and sisters already have. We need to be about that, y'all. And so MWM and other groups and organizations are signing on because one of our immediate demands when we talk about We Charge Genocide is that our black farmers must have what is rightfully theirs, bottom line. So at any rate, let's talk with Sister Kyra. And let's really get what's really going on. I know y'all heard some stuff, but now we're going to get the real deal in terms of the information. Hey, Sister Kyra, you there?
Yes, I am, Empress Chief. Thank you so much for reaching out today. You really blessed me when I saw your caller ID pop up on the phone. Like I said, it's been too long. Lots of stuff going on. And, you know, the Creator has a way of bringing us back together. During these times, especially when you, like you said, we need to have a plan of action. We need to strategize, and we need to be working. And so, you know, I thank you for this opportunity, allowing me to come and to speak once again to our relatives. You know, nation building is really key, and that we, you know, work together, unity. So the black farmers have been out there, have been struggling for a very long time in this country. My husband, Dr. John Boyd, is the founder and president of the National Black Farmers Association. I serve as the event and program coordinator. And so oftentimes people call and they're like, well, I want to speak to John Boyd. And I just want to say sometimes, but, you know, I'm the one you really want to talk to because, you know, I'm the one here trying to put the things together. And I'm one of those, I believe that there was a telegram, telephone, telecara. And if you don't want someone to know something, you better not tell Kara. So thank you for this opportunity to come on tonight and give a word about the current state of black farmers. And many may have seen or read or heard about the black farmers receiving $5 billion in emergency relief under the American Rescue Plan Act of 2021. We know that's very misleading. That headline would lead you to believe that black farmers was going to get $5 billion. But the actual title of the bill that became law is for farmers of color. And black farmers are only about 25% of farmers of color. So within that $5 billion debt relief, emergency relief for farmers of color, $4 billion was allocated for loan payoff debts at USDA for farmers of color. So if you look at that $4 billion, 25% of that takes it down to $1 billion. If only about 2 or 3% of black farmers even have a loan at USDA because of the decades of discrimination, you may be looking at 2,000 people. So those are the things that, you know, we really need to be making sure that people are understanding, you know, what's being said and what is happening. Because sometimes the headline and the messaging can have people to believe something good is happening when it falls way short.
Right. Yes. So just to kind of recap, my sister, for those who maybe have not heard about some of the recent madness that's been going on in the courts, can you just give us a little kind of overview of that?
Well, we knew when we were legislating that bill to pass that there was going to be some pushback. And we were hearing, mm-hmm. you know, that it was going to be challenged in the courts. And it has been. White farmers have filed lawsuits in Wisconsin, Texas, Florida, Oregon, and Nevada, I think. I think there's about 9 states. And
mm-hmm.
what has happened in Wisconsin, that's kind of where we got our first blow, a judge there issued a temporary restraining order. And what that meant, it's been 5 months, and USDA hasn't paid the first loan off. So now they can't because there's a restraining order.
Mm-hmm.
And then the case in Florida, we had a decision there, and that decision enjoined the decision from Wisconsin, so it made it a national restraining order so that the monies wouldn't go out and no farmer of color would have their loan paid off. And they actually started requesting a speedy trial. When have you known white people to want to have a speedy trial? When they don't want true justice, right? They want to be, you know, the judge, the juror, everything, you know, expedite this, hey, you know. But we don't want to see that happen. So we're actually going into discovery. And that's where the National Black Farmers Association has entered an amicus brief. So we are on record in each one of these states fighting for our black farmers to be able to receive this debt payoff. This isn't money coming to these farmers, and there was a lot of confusion about it because it said up to 120%. So I'll give you the example, the analogy, that if a black farmer was fortunate enough to have a loan, a direct loan or a guaranteed loan at USDA Farm Service Agency, so it's just one particular agency at USDA,
mm-hmm.
and they had a balance as of January 1st, 2021, and let's just say for sake of easy computing, that loan balance was $100,000. Well, USDA
mm-hmm.
would pay that loan balance off. So basically, they're paying themselves, okay? Or
right.
the bank where I guaranteed that loan, the $100,000. And then they're going to mail the farmer, the borrower, a check for 20% of that loan amount. So USDA is going to pay themselves or the bank the $100,000 that they loaned to the black farmer that's due back to them. Then they're going to mail the farmer a check for $20,000, And at the end of the year, they're going to mail the farmer a 1099 saying that he had $120,000 in income and hoped that $20,000 was enough to cover the taxes.
Oh, God.
So what the white farmers have said is that by the black farmers and farmers of color receiving this assistance, it's harming them. It's damaging them. When has a black, a Native American, an Asian farmer, anyone sued because the white farmer is getting farm subsidies? 99%.
Mm.
Trillions of dollars in subsidies have gone out to white farmers, and black and Native American and Asian farmers, other farmers of color, have never once, you know, sued and said that they were being damaged because those farmers received that assistance. The farmers have always sued, and in our discrimination cases, it was because we weren't getting the loans and we weren't being properly serviced and we were being foreclosed on. And had our farms gone in the lease back buyback program, and then they leased them to the white farmers so that we couldn't buy them back. So all of these things were discriminatory, and it happened because we were black, and now the white farmers are suing, saying that they're being discriminated against because they're white. So what this is doing actually is setting a precedent so they can go after affirmative action. And it's not racist to correct all the decades of wrongdoing in America that was done on the basis of racism and Jim Crow law. And if this goes forward, that's what we're enacting now, once again in the 21st century, is Jim Crow laws that continue to widen the gap and the inequity between white farmers and farmers of color, black farmers.
Wow. This is just, I mean, it's so blatantly, and you say racist, I mean, this is just truly the examples of white supremacy from an institutionalized standpoint. I mean,
Absolutely. Clearly. And what my husband has said, you know, he asked the farmers, the white farmers, you know, many of them had said, well, we didn't know that there was discrimination at USDA. Well, the thing is, it's not refuted. They acknowledge it. And now that you know that there is, what are you going to do to fix it? We need to acknowledge that there is a race problem in America. And we need to have these conversations. Yes, they're difficult conversations. And the fact that if you treat us equally, after decades of discriminating and treating us poorly, we're never going to close that gap. It's never going to right that wrong, and we're never going to be able compete because we're still disadvantaged. The only way to keep us from being disadvantaged is to advantage us. So my pushback has been, as Congress continues to, you know, lay out more laws and do things moving forward, I'm not interested in a law that creates a new food hub, or that creates a tax credit for an agribusiness that buys from a food hub where there's a black farmer selling. We need to make sure that Congress is paying the farmers, that these monies are going into the farmers to be able to help them to acquire the land, not access the land. We need to acquire it. We need to own it. So we're calling for land ownership, and we're calling for grants and monies to help our farmers, you know, get the equipment, get the tractors. And, you know, a lot of times people don't even realize that a tractor can cost over $150,000. And you buy one tractor, but then you got to buy the implement, and you got to buy the fuel, and you got to buy the seeds. You know, farmers are out there, and they don't have it easy, you know. When they see something coming to farmers, you know, I wish people would, you know, really connect and take time to get to know their local farmers, growers, and producers. And we have a program, it's called Let's Get Growing, and we grow farmers, because it's just like the brother was saying earlier, and you've said it many, many times, it's self-identification. You know, we have to start that, and we have to say, you know, growing our food and creating food access and food security and food sovereignty is liberation. You know, it's not
slavery. That's right.
For black people to be able to put a seed in the ground and grow food and feed themselves and their neighbors and their community, you know, that is nation building. That is,
that's,
you know,
right,
key to our health.
Yes.
And so
yes,
we had a scholarship program, and it just closed down. If there's anyone out there in the audience that was having difficulty submitting an application, it was a full four-year scholarship to attend the University of Nebraska-Lincoln College of Agriculture and Natural Sciences. We're talking valued at $173,000. We had 25 of those, $4.3 million for 1 year. And I think my last count was I had about 8 eligible applicants. That means we left 17 on the table. We left more than half the money on the table because we didn't have graduating high school seniors who wanted to apply for a scholarship, and the name of the scholarship is Next Generation of Black and Hispanic Farmers. You know, what are we doing here? And these scholarships, you know, were pathways to environmental engineers, food scientists, veterinarians, you know, degrees in animal science. There were so many pathways. Someone even could have used their studies to go all the way to become an attorney. But until people start working together and realizing that there are pathways out there, but we have to take action. And, you know, sometimes it means stepping out of our comfort zone where maybe we wanted to attend a HBCU or we didn't want to go, you know, out of our community or out of state. But here's this opportunity that paid 100% out-of-state tuition, room, board, meal plan, books, you name it, and it paid it for 4 years. And so that's, you know, why I appreciated the opportunity to come in and to say and encourage, you know, people. We're here. The National Black Farmers Association has been advocating for farmers and, you know, for civil rights and social justice for over 30 years. My husband, John Boyd, oftentimes we hear about the man who drove or the farmer that drove Newland Wagon to D.C. and drove his tractor and, you know, did all these things, sued the government, got $1.2 billion. Well, you know what? That farmer has a name. His name is John Boyd. And if we don't make him a human and say his name, then history won't ever get it right. And I'm going to make sure that history gets it right. And everyone else, because there are people out there who want to tell that story and take credit for it. It wasn't an attorney who did it, that did all those things and filed those cases in court. He might have came along at the 11th hour and was a part of class counsel, but he wasn't a part of winning that for those black farmers. So those are the things that I say to our activists, to our boots on the ground, to our grassroots organizers.
That's right.
You know, stay ready, stay woke, and keep working. You know, I'm here and I'm so excited to be reconnected and hearing about the 25th anniversary and all the things that are coming up. You know, that we continue to live this legacy, and I want to leave a strong legacy in agriculture and farming and land ownership. I'm blessed that I own 1,500 acres of land. And I want to see each of you own, you know, 100, 200 acres. USDA has loans that's 100% financing. People who need a house can go to USDA Rural Development 502 Housing Program, apply for a house with no money down, even if they've got not so perfect credit. And if they're low income, that program can even subsidize the housing payment. There is no reason why we aren't applying for these programs because they're taxpayer dollars. So if you don't know, usually not knowing is by design.
Right, that's right.
So we're here to tell it and to share it. And the website is blackfarmers.org. I encourage everyone to go look at it. You can email me, you can call us, you can write us. And, you know, there's no minimum. I've said this on the show, I know, at least two times before, and I'm going to say it again. There is no minimum land size requirement. There is a potential gross annual sales of $1,000. So if you're growing on your balcony, on your windowsill, if you're growing somewhere, growing anywhere, you know, realize that that is agriculture and that you can develop a business plan. And then you can file it on your taxes at the end of the year using a Schedule F, F for farm income. And those are the things that are going to help you to navigate the system at USDA. So that's what we're here for. The National Black Farmers Association provides advocacy, outreach, and direct technical assistance. And if there's anything I can do to help any of the listeners, you know, please reach out. We want to help. We're here, and we need you to help us as well, you know, getting this word out and making sure that people understand that these white farmers coming against the black farmers is just the start, because if they can prove, and because they're going after everywhere that USDA uses the term socially disadvantaged. So they're saying everything that they're excluded from now is racist.
See, Sister Carol, let me share this with you, and this is why the We Try Genocide 21 Project is so on point. We know how these people operate and have evaluated very carefully. And so when we assert human rights violations based on the fact that we are the only people, we are the descendants of the only people that were kidnapped, brought here, forced into labor legally for at least 250 years, and then afterwards too, you know, so-called not legally, but the point being, no one else can say that. So my point is, when we say we want reparatory justice, we're talking about not only reparations, but also what's known as restitution, and also in some cases retribution, but definitely for restoration. So my point is this. We have an argument that we're entering into this game, for lack of a better word, that says we charge genocide, crimes against humanity. No one else can say that but us. So we need to be compensated for the damage and the wrong that has been inflicted upon only us. This is what the statement that has to go out to the world. And this is what we're getting ready to do. So you see now why other farmers and other people, whatever, say about their complaint is and they're not getting, that has nothing to do with what we're talking about as to why we also are saying we must have justice. Our ancestors, not yours, not theirs, were forced into servitude, helped build this country with their blood, sweat, and tears. No one else has that
Absolutely.
Argument. See, this
Absolutely.
Is a game changer.
Yep. And that's where, you know, they're trying to push back on the critical race theory and, you know, rewrite history and say, well, we don't have to pay for the sins of our fathers. No, but someone's going to pay. And the thing is, you can't allow it to continue to be an imbalance, you know, when they have taken from everyone else and they sit there hoarding because of their greed and don't want to see anyone else have anything. And every time that it looks like people of color are going to get something, and then they find a way to run to the courts to try to block it. In at USDA, usually when there's a program, those funds go out within weeks. The black farmers and farmers of color, this law passed, and it's been almost 4 to 5 months, and not $1 had been paid out. Why? Why are you moving so slow? Why did Tom Vilsack come back to USDA and now say he needs to have listening and learn sessions when he had already been there 8 years? Didn't you listen and learn then? And so that's what I want to say, and I challenge the listeners to go and pull up the, I think it's the Chicago Tribune, and there's an iPad in there from Dan Glickman and Tom Vilsack to Black Lives Matters on the Black Farmers Movement. And I'm totally offended. And I'm saying, how in the world did these two white men write to Black Lives Matters and try to give them advice and directives when they didn't even want to do anything for the black farmers? They were forced by the courts to do this. It wasn't anything that they did on their own initiative. And then to step up and try to take credit for it and to try to tell black people what they need to do in their own movement, you know, I don't know, you know, where we're going to go other than, you know, back to the streets. And that's really what my husband John Boyd has said. You know, if we, if the black farmers had to get back to Washington and rally in the streets with our mules and wagons and tractors, to get this money, to get this justice, and for white farmers to realize that, hey, it's not racist when you give money to farmers of color to help them, because 99% of the money has gone to white farmers, and our farmers are being foreclosed on. We've got farmers where the discrimination continues. Let me add that in the Florida judge's decision, she said the Department of Justice failed to, I'm trying to think of her word, I can't call it right now, but basically what she said was that DOJ, that USDA failed to demonstrate that there was racial discrimination in the past decade. And I can tell you, my husband filed a complaint against USDA in 2019 for retaliation, breach of discrimination, and discrimination. And many people may not know this. I don't think I've shared this before. But John Boyd actually received a settlement from USDA for racial discrimination in 1997. He went on to do the cases Tedford, Native American Keep Siegel, Love for the Women, and Garcia for the Hispanics. And in 1997, when he did his settlement agreement, USDA agreed to forgive all his debts. John Boyd received complete debt forgiveness in 1997. In 2019, John and I went to buy a home, and guess what the title search company discovered? Over $600,000 in liens against our farm. USDA had never removed the liens, had never forgiven the debt. And had John Boyd not had a piece of paper that wasn't even sealed or recorded anywhere saying that he was entitled to that debt relief. So we had to go back to them and get our attorneys to fix it. And so we filed a complaint. And this was retaliatory. That is a breach of agreement. If the federal government said in 1997 that they, you know, had, I think they had like 12 pages of facts of finding for racial discrimination against John Boyd. And the United States government was to forgive his loan. But they didn't do it. When we went to the county office in 2019, FSA, local county office, the loan manager, well, it wasn't the loan manager, a loan representative, went into the file cabinet and pulled out a folder for John Boyd. Can you believe that? 20 years, and John Boyd still had a folder in that county office. And he pulled out these certificates of satisfaction, okay? And the certificates of satisfaction had been prepared in 1997 in accordance with that settlement agreement. But the loan officer there refused to sign it. They were never signed or executed. They were still sitting in his file. That is what is you call systemic racism and discrimination. When you have federal government employees who don't do their job, even after the courts and everyone else has told them, you know, to stop treating black people and black farmers differently, but they refuse and continue to do it. So that's what I'm saying. You know, we're here. We're living it. And I just want to say to others, I know if it's happening to John and I, it's happening to many others out there. And so if you never, you know, get in that situation to go to the courthouse to check these liens to see if they're there, and then we actually even had to pay to have the liens removed. Do you know any other situation where a borrower has to file the certificates of satisfaction and pay to have the liens taken off their property?
See, this is, again, why we have to assert something different and take this issue in another venue. It's just like anything else. You know, when people go to court, a lot of times they have to request another venue because you can't get justice in that particular. So this is what we're saying now. After 70 years, because remember, we're commemorating Paul Robeson taking the Recharge Genocide petition to the United Nations in 1951 and William Patterson taking it to Paris, France. There's been others, but the thing is the consistency, we haven't demonstrated that and haven't compiled the kinds of data that we are now capable of compiling. So again, they're able to do this stuff to the degree that they're able to do it is because they have not been exposed. Now, one thing you said, Sister Kara, and I've got to say, you said, and we know this is what they say, that these people say they can't be held accountable for the crimes of their ancestors or whatever. That's not true. That is not true at all, which is why you have a few colleges and a few other kinds of foundations that are, in fact, have, in fact, given reparations based on past harm. And the United States cannot say that, meaning they upheld reparations and, by the way, give monies to other countries, including Israel, for harm that was done to them. And they weren't even the ones that did it. In that case. So see, all of that stuff has to now be confronted with and brought to the forefront. We can no longer allow them, the government, and see, that's why our statement says We charge genocide against, and it's against the United States government and others. That's what our stuff says, and others. Because we know there were other institutions, there were other corporations and so forth involved. That's already been researched. Aetna, Wachovia, Bank of America. We already know that there were corporations directly linked to enslavement along with the government. Now, what we put in place as a part of our We Charge Genocide 21 campaign is once our committees and our cadres are actually established in every state, those cadres have the assignment of researching slavery in their state and in their city. Because when we present this to the United Nations and the world, we will show them by city and by state. This is what they did. We're going to cite the cotton plantation, the tobacco plantation. So my point is, the reparatory justice must, in fact, let me just read this to everyone briefly. For those who do not have this, you will be getting it, or if you want it, you can email me, because this is part of our next reparatory justice session. These are the some of the points that we're saying are immediate action, and not necessarily in this order. One, reparation / adequate financial compensation to the survivors and their families of the Tulsa massacre. The release of all of our political prisoners, those who were victims of COINTELPRO, those who are incarcerated as a result of their political views, affiliations, etc. The reopening and the in-depth analysis and examination of Black people killed by police, law enforcement related, etc. All student loan debt of Black students / families is to be rescinded, eliminated, null and void. We Charge Genocide says we reserve the right to have alternatives for the COVID treatment. Justice and equity for the Black farmers. And last but not least, gentrification must now be addressed. There needs to be moratoriums on land grabbing, displacement, and social engineering. We are not playing with these people. These are the things that we are now meeting around in terms of developing the plans of action. And when you hear what some of the strategies are to begin to bring some of this stuff to the forefront, people are going to know this is very serious and well thought out. Okay? So while you're fighting on your end, my sister, I want you to know we coming with some troops and some other ammunition.
Yes.
Okay.
We appreciate it. And
you know, that's where we want to be, you know, because we have to be on the land and we have to be grounded. We have to be rooted. And, you know, we're here. And I just commend you guys for this initiative. I think it's very bold. And in this time, that's what it's going to take. It's going to take some boldness.
Absolutely.
And it's
going to
take
Absolutely.
Upstanding. And I don't care if someone, you know, my husband said that he heard no so long that no meant maybe. And then maybe became yes. You know, he said when he was out there with his mule and wagon, you know, it was very lonely. But when the bill passed, everybody was up there wanting to shake his hand, wanting to get on the podium.
That's
like, yeah,
right.
You know, I was with you. Yeah, I was supporting you. You know, but he
that's
said he didn't
right.
let that discourage him. You know, he went on.
That's right.
And so that's where I want to say to you and all the other organizers and those that are going to be working the comadres, putting this together, you know, I just pray blessings and, you know, that those things that have been hidden will be brought to the light. And I watched the PBS special Book of Negroes several years back, and my husband
mm-hmm.
and I went to the county courthouse here in Mecklenburg, Virginia. And lo and behold, there was a Book of Negroes, and they had sent it to be rebound. And the thing is, you know, if we don't go and get these records and protect them, they will continue to burn down courthouses and destroy
right.
paper.
Right.
Because not only do they commit genocide, they commit paper-side. And so, you know, they figure if they can destroy the documents and we have no evidence, then therefore, we don't have a legal leg to stand on. And so I pray all those things to be preserved and those that have been hidden, you know, to come forward. And just that this work will go forward in a mighty way and that people will continue to come and be a part of the nation and realize that, you know, we are who we are, and the first step in being who we are is to say who we are. And so every time I write something for Black Farmers, I was listening to that earlier, and I wanted to weigh in, but I definitely make sure I put a capital B there. And, I didn't have to wait for someone to tell me, you know. It was just instinctive, you know. When I wrote Farmers for the first time, I've been here working for this organization for about 8 years now, and never once did I ever write it with a lowercase b. That says that, you know, we're a powerful people, and we've got to capitalize ourselves and what it is that we have and find value in that. So thank you so much, Empress, for having me tonight. Please, if there's anything I can do in the future going forward, you know, count me in, and I look forward to further collaborating and partnering and seeing some mighty things done for our people. And just asking those who are prayerful, spiritual people to know that we see this as I don't want to call it an act of war, saying that we're at a civil war, because those are their terms. That's what they would like to see.
They want
to wage a race war against us. But we're not going to fall for that. We've been there, done that. I think we are going to, you know, really rise above this because of who we are and all that the ancestors have already sacrificed. And the problem that
we have
is they don't want to give it up. It's ours, and they've got to give it up. So, you know, I just commend everyone out there, you know, to keep doing what they're doing. And if there's any way that we can help, and that those who want to help and need more information, visit the website, give me a call, send us an email. We're here to help.
And so, Zakai, let's reiterate that. Family, we're talking about students that will have the capability of going to college for agricultural studies and anything relevant to that, even the business aspect of it. Listen, we got to do better. Many of you are mothers and fathers. We've got to make certain that our children have access to this kind of stuff. We need this for them and for the future and for us right now. We need our own food, y'all, and we need to have some control over this industry, making certain that it's healthy, nourishing types of food, because you know the system is now in the process of creating all kinds of stuff. And so we better act like we know. So once again, Sister Kyra, give them the information. We're going to send it out because there has been technical problems with applications. We are now fortunate enough to get this information circulated again. And we're going to be ready the next time. Oh, by the way, is there another conference coming up? Because I know before COVID, every year, the Black Farmers Association was doing a conference. Is there anything coming up?
Yes. This will be our 31st annual conference. I'm thinking it's going to be in Columbia, South Carolina. Should be November 5th and 6th. It's usually the first weekend in November. And our conference is free to attend. And all that information can be found on our website once it's determined. But, yes,
great.
We want to encourage people, and the link to the scholarship is there as well. I haven't taken it down. It's still live because some people were having difficulties getting that submitted. But the eligibility criteria is a graduating senior, and we were able to go back to a graduating senior in 2020 or 2021 because of COVID. So, unfortunately, it's not for a transfer student, someone who's already in college, but for a graduating senior who hasn't been to college and wants to attend University of Nebraska, Lincoln. So it can't be used at another university. It's strictly for that school. All the bills will be paid, tuition, room, board, books, fees, everything for the student for 4 years, so they don't have to reapply. All they have to do is maintain at least a 2.5 GPA and the criteria to get the scholarship is a minimum of 3.0 GPA. And all that information is there on the website.
Okay. And family, we will also be sending it out through our networks as well in the next day or so to make sure we can get it circulated as best as possible at this time. We're going to also attempt to send a representative to the conference, Sister Kara, so talk more about that. And one other question, we're developing a project, and I want to share this with you and get the paperwork to you as soon as possible to the Black Farmers Association. We have a brother here in our area that we're partnering with, a whole major kind of project that we're going to do in Philadelphia, but we want to bring it to the city. Are you familiar with Torpedo Pot?
I don't think so.
Okay, I am going to send you that information because this is technology that a Black man has developed that helps in the development of crops and all kinds of produce production and so forth. And we are going, brilliant Black man, and we will be partnering with him. So we're looking for next year to take this into all of the major cities because the way this is, well, I'm going to send it to you. And then we can do a meeting and start looking at how this can possibly benefit the Black farmers as well.
Yes, and I appreciate that and look forward to, you know, just building out in many areas because everything that we need comes from a farm, and my husband says sometimes, you know, you might didn't need a lawyer or a doctor, but everybody needed a farmer today because they ate at least
one. That's right.
So, you know, when you guys are sitting down, you know, think about those farmers out there, but not only for the food on your table, timber that builds our houses, and even the paper that we write on, you know, comes from someone's farm, and the clothing, you know, if it's cotton, it come out of someone's field. And so those are the things that we're seeing, you know, that farmers are woven into our everyday life, but oftentimes they're considered third-class citizens. They're looked down upon. Many people tell their children they want them to grow up to be doctors, lawyers, teachers, and policemen, nurses, but I don't know of anyone today that woke up and told their child, I want you to grow up and be a farmer. You know, and so that's where I think we need to rethink that situation because if we don't increase the number of farmers, somebody's going to go hungry. And he who controls the food controls the man. So I want to control my food because I don't want anyone else controlling me. Because when you get hungry, you get desperate. And people do things that they typically wouldn't do, you know, to get that food. And,
that's
you know, we don't want to see our people in those situations. So we want to empower people to be able to have their own land and to grow their own food or at least support the people who are. And one more thing I'll leave with you. My husband says his, two things. My husband said his grandfather told him that he couldn't pass on a PhD, but he could pass on his raggedy farm to his children. You know, so you out there with degrees, you can't take them, you know, you can't pass them down to your children, but if you got a farm and some land, you can leave it to your children. And the other thing is that when you take a step, you're otherwise trespassing on someone else's or standing on your own, you know. So let's look at land ownership in that context, and that, you know, every step you take, you step in on somebody's land. And I would challenge our people to, you know, buy a plot of land, to get something they can stand on and say, this is mine, and I can't be moved. I won't be moved.
Wow, I love it. I love it. Well, we are definitely going to make sure that we keep this connection moving forward, and we are going to get some victories. Before you leave us, sister, I'm just going to ask our family, if you have any questions or comments, family, please press one now before we close out. Again, we are talking with Sister Kara Boyd. Of course, we're talking about the Black Farmers Association, but also all the various things that is connected to why we must fight for this land. This is so important. And our rights and what is justly ours. We must preserve it. We must also advance. We've got to make certain that we understand and know the technology that's now connected to farming. This is not just, you know, getting the mule and the plow anymore. There's some serious stuff going on here. And we need to be really abreast and ready to move forward in the 21st century. If we don't do it now, how are we going to be able to have something for the future for our children and our grandchildren and their grandchildren and so forth? So I'm going to go back to Brother Lee real quick. I still see he's in queue. I'm going to see if he has a question or a comment. And then we're going to close out. Brother Lee, you got some thoughts about what we've been talking about?
Not really, Empress, no more than the sisters correct that when we're talking about tangible assets, there are assets that should be fought for at all times. There's nothing irreplaceable of, you know, having land. You know, that's the basis of all things. And
right.
I think she pointed out a really important point about this attitude toward farmers. I mean, how do you have any kind of society in terms of being free as a people? You don't grow and produce your own food. And we got to get out of these bourgeois ideas about success is having a business where you push paper, but that push the real values of things that allow human beings to be who they are. And farm is very important. And if I can ask the sister if it would be possible, we would like for her to come and tell her story, if possible, tomorrow on our program, tomorrow night at 7, so we can get the word out, particularly about this access to information going to school and learning more about farm.
Yes.
And I think that's very important. So, you know, other than that, you know, I just would like to tell the sisters to keep doing what they're doing. And we would also like to help get the word out and see what we can do to help that particular struggle out. So on that note, we say let's continue to struggle. And with struggle, we know we'll make progress. So, you know, where there's no struggle, there's no progress. And we'd like to have to share her story with our audience and the rest of the world.
Okay. But what I'll do, Brother Lee, I'll make sure you have sister's number. I'll send both of you numbers, and that way you can connect and you can schedule her, you know, and get this. We got to get this stuff circulated. There's no question. All these black students.
To add to that, though, I don't think we can talk about that in separation of the rest of our people around the world. Because this whole emphasis of continuing taking what belongs to African people and saying they can own and control it is the same attitude that in Washington less than a week ago, they had a group of politicians representing the U.S. government. They have already made a plan that by 2030, all of Africa Knox resources are going to be owned by them. They came out publicly and punch blank and saying they have a strategy not only to own it, but they are chosen in different European businesses who control the cobalt, the zinc, the copper, the oil throughout the whole continent. And this is the kind of discussion, this is the kind of collectiveness that we must join together and understand. What goes on anywhere when it comes to our people is a threat to us everywhere. But they have made a plan by 2030. You talk about what's going on in the Congo now? They have already set out a plan, a process of they are planning on controlling all of the resources in Africa throughout the continent. Because people don't understand. Again, he who controls Africa will control the world. So all of this is connected. So that's our point for tonight.
All right.
And we'll talk about
this
tomorrow on the program. Yeah.
All right, great. And again, family, to remind everyone, of course, Africa on the Move will come on at 7 o'clock tomorrow, Sunday, and that's July 4th. You're going to celebrate 4th of July, huh, Brother Lee?
Yeah.
I'm messing with you.
For the day you lie, yeah.
All right, okay, so check out Africa on the Move at 7, from 7 to 9. On Blog Talk Radio, Africa on the Move. Thanks, Brother Lee. All right, family, we're going to get ready to close this session out. We thank all of you for tuning in. We will be back next week, same time. We're going to talk next week. Again, we're kind of in this freedom mode since people are, you know, looking at some independence right about now. And next week, we're going to start talking more with our black veterans, because that's one of the entities that we're looking to have as part of the Recharge Genocide project. There's certain teams that we want, the black farmers team, to make certain that the information about the black farmers, the atrocities, the injustices that have been inflicted upon them, us, for decades, centuries even, and also our veterans. So next week we're going to talk about the case, the murder of Lavina Johnson, and how the We Charge Genocide is going to focus on her case and other black veterans over the decades, the treatment, the mistreatment of our veterans. So we'll talk more about that next week. In the meantime, we're going to leave you, as we oftentimes greet you, in the spirit of Ma'adenhotep. But remember, there will never be any real peace until there's truly Ma'atik justice. And you know what we say, Sister Kara, and definitely you know what we say, Brother Lee. If there's no justice, there's no what?
No peace.
No peace, absolutely. All right, Sister Kara, one more time before we close out, please give our people the website address again, and we will be sending it out tomorrow as well. Oh, did I lose her? I sure did. We lost Sister Kara. Okay. All right. Just go to Black Farmers Association, family. You will find it. Just put in Black Farmers Association, and you will definitely get that information. And, again, we will be sending it out tomorrow about student scholarship. 4 years of college, free, everything paid. We got to put this information out there. We need people, our people, to know how to grow and sustain our food supply, okay? So, again, tomorrow we'll start sending it out via email and text. Just want to remind you all again, of course, Community Comp, you can see it on YouTube. You can just go there anytime, just put in Community Comp. And, of course, Sister Keisha, Brother Tad, Brother Ashe, Thorough Black Talk, Worldwide View, comes on every Thursday live at 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock, and they're again on YouTube, and of course, again, Brother Lee with Africa on the Move tomorrow, 7 o'clock, Blog Talk Radio. All right, family, we are out. Want to remind you, coming up, we're declaring RBG Day, Red, Black, and Green Day, Flag Day, that is, August 17th. We'll tell you more about it next week. All right, Brother Lee, good to have you back with us, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Ready for the revolution.
All right, Ashe, organize, organize, organize. Peace, everyone.
Peace.